Hi, I'm Joe Feeks, editor of Pig Health Today, and with me is Dr. Clayton Johnson. He's a veterinarian at Carthage Veterinary Service in Carthage, Illinois. Always good to see you, Clayton.
Yep, good to see you, Joe.
We're going to talk today about porcine circovirus, or PCV. Now, I'm sure a lot of veterinarians and producers who are looking at this video are saying, well, I know all about that. I've had PCV, too. That's been a concern of mine for years. But now the industry's talking about porcine circovirus type 3, or PCV3, what's really the difference?
Well, there's a significant difference in terms of the genetics of the virus. The genotypes for PCV3 are dramatically different than the genotypes for PCV2, and essentially that comes down to sequencing. We can sequence both of the viruses and then compare their sequences to each other. And when we do that, we see that PCV3 is a relative of PCV2, but a dramatically different relative of PCV2.
So similar in name only.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say at this point. We don't know a lot about the potential clinical signs and the transmission, some of those things that maybe we understand with PCV2, we don't understand with PCV3. Maybe if there are issues with PCV3, there could be similar clinical signs, similar transmission, and maybe even similar control strategies, but we don't know that at this point. We just know they're very different viruses genetically.
Now, all commercial swine operations vaccinate for PCV2. Mm-hmm. If this virus, PCV3, is that much different, I'm thinking that there's probably very little cross-protection. You can't expect any benefit if you vaccinate for PCV2, you're not going to see any coverage for PCV3.
Yeah, that's our expectation right now, is the vaccines for PCV2 are very good for PCV2, but we don't expect any cross-protection into PCV3.
Now, at the Lehman Conference here in St. Paul, yesterday you moderated a 2.5-hour session on the changing face of PCV, and the first half of that was devoted to PCV3 in particular. There was a lot of discussion about sequencing and really understanding this virus. Can you kind of recap the highlights of that discussion?
Yeah, I think to set the stage for the discussion, the first thing is to understand that we had folks in there from all over the world. We had representatives from Europe who had access to the data in Europe as well as what's in Asia. We had a host of folks from the Americas, North America and South America were well represented. And certainly in today's world, you can go into GeneBank and other references and go look for what are the genotypes that are out there. We talked a lot about sequencing. We had some experts in the diagnostic realm in there and got feedback from everybody that PCV3 is very consistent in terms of what genotypes that are out there. It doesn't appear that there is a lot of variation in the genome of PCV3 at this point. So we're seeing one consistent virus in our pig populations right now.
So we've established that PCV is a separate virus. Is it actually causing disease?
That's a big question and hotly debated. We talked a lot with the group about the difference between infection and disease. And there's a big conundrum with any endemic pathogens, so pathogens that we expect all pigs to be infected with. There's a big conundrum of how do you diagnose the disease syndrome? Because all pigs will be infected. No different, Joe, than you and I are infected with a host of pathogens that are living with us in harmony. They're commensal pathogens and not a disease-causing problem. But we're infected with them. And pigs are the same way. So trying to understand the difference between infection and disease is extremely difficult, and it takes more time than a disease, say, that's an epidemic pathogen, like a PRRS, like a PED, like an African swine fever, where when you have the disease and you get the diagnostic results, you know fairly quickly that, yes, I have the pathogen, and that pathogen in almost all cases results in disease.
Now, when PCV2 first came on the scene about 20-odd years ago, people didn't know what it was, and it transmitted to virtually every farm in the country, it seemed. And of course, today it's common practice to vaccinate for PCV2. Is there that same potential, you think, with PCV3? Could this emerge or evolve into something much bigger than it is today?
I think we have to answer that question yes. We don't understand enough about emerging diseases and what drives the emergence of a pathogen that has historically lived within a population in harmony, has been a commensal pathogen, and what makes that pathogen, like PCV2, turn into a disease-causing pathogen. So we can't predict that, unfortunately, very well today. And as a result, we have to monitor pathogens like PCV3 that may go from being a resident pathogen of the pig, not causing any issues, to now, for whatever reason, a change in the host, a change in the pathogen itself, turning into a disease-causing problem. So it's something we've got to keep our eye on. I wish I could tell you it's something we should look for leading indicators of, that we should have our finger on the pulse of changes in the virus or changes in the host that will tell us if and when it will turn into a disease-causing organism and consistently cause disease. We aren't that good today. So unfortunately, we're left with monitoring our pigs, and when they get sick, we submit diagnostic samples. We do the normal battery of tests for the horses, if you will, that we expect in the disease investigation. If we don't see any horses, but we hear the hoofbeats, we look for zebras. And that's where we're at. And we've got a tremendous ability to look for zebras these days. Next generation sequencing gives us a whole host of technology capabilities we haven't had before to do a bit of what's in there, look at the samples we send in. So if I have, say, a reproductive case at a sow farm where unacceptable outcomes for my producer, I've got to investigate it. I look for PCV2. I look for PRRS. I look for parvo. I look for lepto. I look for erysiphilis. All of the horses that I might investigate when I hear the hoofbeats of reproductive failure. I don't find them. I ask the next questions. All right, let's go look for the zebras. Today we can identify zebras better than we ever have before, which is a blessing and a curse, because now it opens up a lot of questions about pathogens like PCV3 when we find them, and especially pathogens that are named similar to another pathogen everyone is familiar with. That generates a lot of discussion.
And I think that's really what has the industry on edge about this particular virus, because you hear PCV, everybody leans forward, they want to learn more. Yeah. What are you hearing? I know you haven't experienced PCV3 yourself, or at least you don't think you have. But what are you hearing from other veterinarians in terms of how it is presenting itself in swine herds? Does it hit a certain age or segment of production? And where is it being found?
The most common feedback I get is that cases where a sow farm has chronic mummy issues, so chronic embryonic death loss or death loss of the baby pig before the pig is born, and mummification of that pig as it comes out, those samples from some farms are coming back positive for PCV3 in the absence of other pathogens. Like you said, I've been fortunate that I haven't worked directly with any herds who've experienced that, but some very good veterinarians who've done very thorough diagnostic updates, workups, have, and I certainly respect their judgment that in some cases they feel PCV3 has been a driver of those dead fetuses, the mummied pigs that are coming out at a higher than target rate.
Let's talk about the virus that started all of this, or at least is a distant cousin of PCV3, and that's PCV2. We know that virtually every commercial operation vaccinates for PCV2. I think most people feel like we've done a good job of managing the disease. But how do we know that we're doing a good job?
Well, I think we have to recognize what a success story PCV2 vaccines have been. In my career, I've seen the emergence of PCV. I've seen the lack of a vaccine for control options and the devastation that it had for producers. And then now the development of vaccines that have completely turned around the organism to a point where we feel generally we have control of it. Like I talked before, we never know which pathogens are going to emerge, and sometimes they may reemerge. Pathogens we've historically had under control, like influenza, like rotavirus, that if you asked us 20 years ago, do we need new technology there? Do we need better control programs? Every veterinarian to a person would have said, no, we're good. Those pathogens are stable. The products that we have now are efficacious. We don't have problems there. If you ask that same group of veterinarians today, every one of them would say, we need new tools. Those pathogens have changed. Something has changed. The disease outcome is more significant. It's more regular. And the tools that worked yesterday don't work as well today. So put PCV2 in that category, because we don't have an ability to predict what's going to come down next as an emerging disease, as the next hot disease topic. We've got to continue to monitor it. And we can do that primarily through sequencing of the virus.
And the interesting thing about PCV is that it started as PCV2A, and then we saw 2B, and now we've got 2D, which I understand is I guess, the most dominant strain in U.S. herds. What are you seeing in your own practice?
We do a little bit of sequencing on PCV2, and the sequencing we do would be consistent with what everybody reports. PCV2D is the most common genotype in the United States right now. And if you have pigs that are showing clinical signs of circovirus-related disease, and you sequence a PCV2, you're most likely to get a PCV2D out of that sequence.
And I guess the industry is lucky in that cross-protection has gone a long way in managing this disease, because the vaccines either contain 2A, 2B, or in one case, there's one now that has 2A and 2B, yet 2D is the primary target.
Mm-hmm. It's a situation that deserves a lot of monitoring because the pathogen continues to evolve. The vaccines are based off of some of the ancestors of the pathogen. Mm-hmm. At what point will we need updates? We don't really know, so we've got to pay close attention to it.
How do we know a vaccine is working? I mean, can we look and say, well, they're not showing any clinical signs of PCV, therefore it must be working, but could there be some subclinical disease at work that we're just not aware of?
Yeah, there absolutely can. And as astute as we try to be with making observations, our eyes are not always the best measurement of disease impact. Fortunately, with subclinical disease, most of the disease impacts can be seen, if nothing else, through average daily gain, but some sort of a performance metric for the growing pig or the reproductive pig. And so good research is the answer to the question of how do we look for subclinical disease.